Okay, good afternoon. Today is a day for energy and its subsequent outputs or results that come from energy-related issues. So I'll start off today's lectures looking at energy insecurity and its relations and activities in the urban sphere, that is urban planning. So I'll just be looking at those three areas. I will be giving a snapshot of these three areas. I may not go very, very deep into them, but I'll give a snapshot for us to understand how energy is tying into the other two, water and food that we have been going through, and how it relates to planning. So I'll give quickly an idea or a reminder of what we have been going through the last 2 days on food and on water, and how then energy ties in to make that nexus complete. I will give a small snapshot of the situation in Africa, then move down to Kenya's scenario, from where then I will look at energy in the urban planning system, and then eventually look at what is the energy situation around the world. So this is a picture we were shared with yesterday, trying to give how energy tie, rather how these three tie together. And just to give a reminder of what this is all about, we know very well that when we are producing water for consumption, we need to have energy in the water extraction from the different sources, the treatment, and eventually the pumping into our various areas where we need to use this water. We need energy. And energy and water is used in the production of food, where we have to do irrigation and other related irrigation activities. We also have to use energy when we are in the factories doing the manufacturing of the different foods that we consume eventually. So these three are intertwined. They come together, and you cannot do one, or rather, you cannot do one activity without involving the other aspect. So what are the energy, water, energy, food challenges that we have around the world? These are statistics that have been shared by the World Bank. And these statistics are not very good. They are grim. You can see from the first point, 1 in 8 people go to bed hungry every single night. This majorly happens in the developing world. Even in the developed world, you find there are people who are not having meals. 1.3 billion people have no access to electricity. This is approximately about 600 million. In Africa. The population of Africa would be about roughly about 2.5 billion. So you can see about 600 million have no access to electricity. And this is majorly in the rural areas. More than about 650 million don't have access to clean water. Again, these are statistics that we are very, very familiar with. And so forth and so forth. And so you can see the statistics are not very, very good. And I believe as the sustainable development goals were being prepared, this was part of what made people to sit down and try and see how they can be able to improve on the living standards of the people around the world. And in one of the 17 sustainable development goals, we have number 7, which majorly focuses on affordable clean energy. Within that goal, we have a number of objectives that have been set. And among these, I have just highlighted 3. By the year 2030, to ensure we have universal access to affordable, reliable, and modern, probably the word that we need to be take note of is modern energy services. Because as I shall be showing you, we have energy services that are still, we may call them traditional, which are not modern. And therefore, as we continue using them, then we are again affecting the environment. By the year 2030, increase substantially the share of renewable. Again, the word here is renewable. I'll be sharing the different types of energy resources. We have the renewable, the non-renewable, and others. Again, to see exactly what is this that we are referring to. By 2030, double the global rate of improvement in energy efficiency. Again, I'll be mentioning a few issues on energy efficiency, especially when we are looking at the urban planning on issues where we have the building stock that has been there for a while. Okay, the old building stock becomes now the issue, not the new building stock, because it's easy for us to incorporate new technologies in new building stock. But as we have the old building stock that has been there for a while, then again, those buildings become very energy efficient. And therefore, these are some of the things that we need to deal with. You cannot put down all the building stock, the old building stock. You have to now try and see how to make them energy efficient. In sub-Saharan Africa, if I may jump from the global arena into the south, in sub-Saharan Africa, you find the issues of energy, especially in as far as electricity is concerned, are still very, very grim. About 600 million people have no access to electricity, and this I mentioned a little bit earlier. About 80% of those in rural areas lack access to electricity. Then, to have development, we must have manufacturing. And again, you will find that in sub-Saharan Africa, because of lack of adequate access to electricity, then manufacturers suffer, because at times they'll have to have their machinery stopped from working. Sometimes you will have power outages where, you know, I don't think this happens here because of the storage that you have. But for us in Africa, sometimes you may find as you are doing something, power goes off. There are certain products that require continuous processing. So when power goes off for 2 hours, it means that all that was on the line for manufacturing gets spoiled and you have to remove it. And therefore, you start having issues with manufacturing. When this map here is just to give us a picture of what we have, in comparison to the rest of the world, you can see the dark central part we have here in Africa. That area, the number of people who are lacking access to electricity is so high. And it's darkest around here. And you know what is here, isn't it? The Congo Forest. So in that area, access to electricity is quite low. Again, this is just giving us electricity vis-a-vis the GDP of the different countries in Africa. So what are some of the issues that are making us to have part of that grim picture in Africa? We have a few locations where we have, for example, oil and gas. We have oil and gas being drilled in the Niger Delta, part of North Africa. And basically that's it. But in these areas, we have issues. One, those areas, some of them are very remote. Access to those areas is a problem. And of course, in some of those areas, since access is quite difficult, then you may have attacks on the people who are drilling, as it happens mainly in the Niger Delta, where we have Nigeria. We have had civil war going on in Chad and countries that are around that area. Libya at some point was a major oil producer, but we are now aware of what has happened to Libya. We have had civil war, and there has been a lot of disruption in the oil production, which was a major source of energy in those areas. In certain areas like the Niger Delta, poverty. I don't know whether we heard of the story of Ken Saro-Wiwa. He was an environmentalist who was really fighting for the people of the Niger Delta. He was killed. So again, this becomes a risk to some of the human right activists who are trying to protect the local communities from environmental degradation, because this is where these people live, and some of those big mining companies destroy the areas. So what is the future? Having looked at that grim picture around Africa, there's been a lot of investment, or this investment in renewables, and this include trying to tap into what Africa has. From the picture I gave, we have oil, for example, or energy sources mainly in the northern part of Africa, the Niger Delta, and the rest have to rely heavily on importation of this. And therefore now, the best way to go is to try and look at other options and alternatives that Africa is very rich in. We know in Africa, the sun shines about 10 to 12 hours a day, and this happens on a daily basis. And therefore, Africa, we are trying to tap into this solar resource to try and see if we can be able to, you know, reduce the gap on the non-availability and access to electricity. Wind is another key resource that Africa is endowed with. So there are areas where wind farms are coming up. In Kenya right now, we have about two wind farms that have been developed, one in the Ngong Hills and another one in the northern part of the country, the Turkana area. And this is tapping into one key resource which we have not been having before. Electric cars, yes, here in Europe, it may be something that is obvious, because I think you've been encountering this for quite a while. In Africa, we are now introducing this. We have a few models of this coming up, being imported into the country. We still are a long way. We have a long way to go because, as I've mentioned, the issue of power outrage, we don't have enough. So if you have a power, an electric car, and power goes off for several hours, then it means you may not move. So what we are really being encouraged is hybrid, where the vehicles can use both fossil fuel and electricity. Green hydrogen production. This is the splitting of the hydrogen molecule. Yes, this is being tried in a few areas, but it's expensive. It requires a lot of energy to do. So as I've mentioned, solar energy is what much of Africa is trying to tap into. And I've just mentioned a few statistics here. Africa has about 117% more sunshine than Germany. Okay. And yet, Germany is the global leader in solar energy. So these are things which are paradox. You know, we have the resource, but we are not tapping into it to utilize, to meet the gap that we have. In regions on the northern part of Africa, Morocco and related countries on that side, they have moved ahead. Morocco, South Africa, they have really moved ahead in terms of trying to ensure that their populations are becoming almost having access to energy. This we are familiar with, having panels spread, and then you have these stored in batteries, using energy, solar energy for pumping, and also other applications that I had mentioned prior. I've also mentioned of some of the wind farms. For example, in Kenya, we have two. In Africa in general, we have a lot of development of this in North Africa, East Africa, as I've mentioned, Southern Africa. A lot of wind farms are being put up to ensure that that energy access gap is taken care of. One of the best energy source is nuclear. And I'll be mentioning some of the issues that arise with the issue of nuclear later on when I'll be looking or summing up in general. In Africa, we have one commercial nuclear plant, and this is in South Africa. Some of the details have been mentioned there. But generally in Africa, why are we not utilizing this source? We have technological challenges where we don't have the requisite technologies to ensure that we are able to manufacture energy using nuclear processes successfully. The cost of dealing or building reactors, and eventually the issue of the management of the nuclear waste, still may be an issue for us, because handling of nuclear waste has to be very, very carefully done. In Africa also, we have energy being generated through the hydropower. This is water, generation of energy through water, where you build a dam, block water, have a reservoir, and then run the water through turbines, and then move on to generate electricity. This is happening on our major rivers, the Nile, the Congo, and others. We have dams in Kenya. We have dams along our main rivers, River Tana, River Athi, several dams. But dam construction has its challenges as well. Normally, location has to be very well thought through, because most of the time you may have a conflict between the location where you are identifying to have your dam and the flora and fauna of that area. Sometimes you will find the location identified is also the location where we have some of the best plants, the best trees, animal breeding areas, and so forth and so forth. And therefore, again, you end up with a lot of conflict. Human displacement, population displacement, again arises. So when you have probably identified a location, you will find, again, you have population staying in that particular area. And therefore, you have to displace people or have people relocated to other areas. As we are aware, climate change has come into place. And again, the erratic rainfall patterns that we are experiencing are not guaranteeing us adequate water. And hydropower generation relies heavily on water availability and enough of it. And therefore, with some of the erratic rainfall patterns now we are seeing, we are having problems where sometimes rivers are drying, and therefore certain turbines in a hydro power plant are shut off, and therefore you don't have enough power. The Kenyan situation, I've mentioned a little bit of it, but that gives us a summary of what happens in Kenya. Our capacity, 57%, is generated through water, hydropower. 32% is thermal. Diesel run power plants. 2% is through wind. We also have certain glaciers in the Rift Valley area, as Kenya lies within the Great Rift Valley. And here we have a lot of volcanic activities taking place. So we have certain locations around Nakuru area, the middle area of Kenya, Baringo area, where we are able to tap into some of these hot glaciers to generate geothermal power. In the rural areas, we still rely heavily on the traditional fuels, the charcoal, the firewood, paraffin, for certain activities, lighting, of course, cooking as main activities. And about 90% of the rural population is heavily dependent on this kind of traditional energy sources. Yes. Yeah. Which one? The fourth point. Geothermal. Yes, and it's just what I was explaining. Geothermal and other at the coastal areas. Okay. You could have water being heated up, and then you're able to generate electricity through heating of water. So mainly this is the same, geothermal and imagined thermal power. You can have glaciers, and these are the ones that are being used to generate power.
That profile just gives what we have in Kenya.
And this is part of what I'd mentioned. Access to electricity, about 61%. Access to clean cooking, about 16%. And the others we can be able to get from here. Renewable energy, energy that can easily be able to be recycled after a short while. Solar, wind, bioenergy. This is the situation that we have in the country. And we have been having renewable energy growth in Kenya because of the realization that some of the energy sources are difficult to deal with. So right now, currently, we heavily rely on a mix of the different production or energy production resources. We have renewable, we have non-renewable. And this chart, or rather this slide, is giving the current situation as we have. Kenya ranks 9th in the world for its geothermal power generation. As I've mentioned, the country lies within the Great Rift Valley, and there we have quite a number of glaciers where we are now currently tapping heavily on the heat that is being generated through this to run turbines and therefore able to generate electricity. As we do this, of course, one of the outputs is CO2 emission, one of the key gases that leads to the greenhouse effect. Again, in that endeavor to ensure that we are taking care of our population and we are trying to improve on manufacturing, we are also increasing on the emission of CO2. And this has been increasing. So for example, from the year 2014 to the year 2019, in a span of 5 years, we have increased our CO2 emission by about 31%. Here, I'm trying to show some of the cooking gases I've mentioned, the traditional cooking gases, charcoal, using firewood. And about 76-80% of the cooking is being done using some of these traditional energy sources. Of course, this comes with its problems. For example, death as a result of air pollution internally. If you are using a lot of this, then there is a lot of CO2 that is generated, and this leads to slow death. So that slide is explaining what I've just been talking about. So here you can see an old lady who has set up some fire to cook, and you can see a lot of smoke is getting into her eyes. You know, of course, you'll expect the eyes to be teary, and then, of course, she'll be inhaling. So a lot of these traditional energy sources that we use for cooking, lead to a lot of the respiratory diseases that are experienced by the population. On the Kenyan scenario, I don't want to go beyond that. I want now to move into another area where, again, we want to see how energy is relating to the activities that we undertake. And this is in the urban area. Most of us are living in the urban area, and therefore, again, we interact or we use a lot of energy in different areas. And basically, an urban area is like an organism where a lot of activities take place. And these activities take place in different systems. You will have a water system, you have building system, waste that is being generated in different forms. Wastewater is one of it, solid waste. You have a lot of communication that is taking place, a lot of transportation that takes place in urban areas. Most of these urban systems heavily, heavily rely on energy supply. And for us to ensure that we continue developing sustainably as the sustainable goals demand, then we must be able to deal with the energy issues that are in some of our system. Normally, you will find handling of energy-related issues by management, where you engage the issues of policy, legal issues and related, but also in an urban ecosystem, you have a lot of design work that has to take place to change the environment through either transportation systems or through housing systems, where you overly change the environment. And as we do so, a lot of energy is expended, it's used. We consume a lot of this energy. And we have about three main urban systems that heavily use energy. Households, our houses. And when you talk about households, you're talking about, you know, where we, you know, take, you know, we are most of the time. So offices will be part of it. Okay, where we sleep, the accommodation, where we are taking a lot of our activities. We also have another system, the transportation system. We have to keep on moving from one area to another. We have to access, we have to link different areas, you know. So a lot of transportation is being done in urban areas. And then industries, again, to happen heavily in urban areas, because basically these are the things that bring people together. You want to work in an industry, and therefore you mainly stay in urban areas where you have the resources. In as far as energy is concerned, then we have to start looking at solutions that will deal with the energy that is required within this. Sometimes we move into energy saving solutions. Here there are many. Sometimes you want, if you have lights, you want to use intelligent lighting, which responds to human movement and things like that. So when there's nobody, the light goes off. When somebody approaches, the light goes on, and other systems that you want to use for energy saving. Also, we have even developed energy saving the LED lamps to save on energy. Before, we used to have the coil connected lamp bulbs, and these were expending a lot of heat. Then, because we use a lot of energy, we want now to start again looking for alternatives. So apart from the saving, using saving related solutions, we want again to start thinking of alternatives beyond the traditional. Then we want to get facilities that are efficient. And then we have to innovate to deal with the three issues that I've mentioned. And this usually is done sometimes through policy and sometimes other corrective measures that will involve retrofitting, especially in old structures. Just to give a quick picture of why the urban area is of a concern. As we know, in terms of surface area, land surface area, the urban areas or the cities occupy about only 3%. But on the flip side, they are housing about 75% of the human population. So a lot of population is being housed in a very, very small area. And therefore, urban areas become areas of serious concern in terms of how we use resources like energy resource. With this small mass and that amount, number of that high percentage of population, again, you do expect that it is this small areas that again are affecting us when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions. Okay, because that's where we have a lot of population and a lot of activities, and of course the output of some of these activities, especially the industrial related activities, is greenhouse gases. In developing countries, we have, of course, uniquenesses when it comes to issue of growth in the urban areas. They are growing at a very, very fast rate. Industries are also happening in those areas at a very, very, very fast rate. And of course, with this pollution is a resultant. Waste generation, because of the increasing population, again, is increasing in high volumes. And then remember, we've talked about issues in developing countries where energy supply is inadequate. So with the growth of the urban areas and the uncertainty in energy supply, then you will see a conflict of what is likely to happen. So this is basically what I'm mentioning in the next slide. That conflict where you have high population, but then we have little supply in terms of energy. And therefore, we need to have efficiency incentives. Energy cost is the main incentive for energy efficiency. So what are the main challenges when it comes to energy provision in urban areas? We have exhaustion as a result of geopolitical concerns. One of the key geopolitical concerns that we have had recently is our war of Russia and Ukraine. It has been a big geopolitical concern. We also had wars in the Arab countries, Iran, Iraq. We all know what happened when, you know, when those countries fought, and the issue of oil prices and so forth and so forth. We also have an issue of the increasing energy bill as a result of, you know, the prices going up, and then environmental concern because of the high production of greenhouse gases. I've mentioned on this, our main energy consuming sectors in urban areas, industries, buildings, and the transportation sector. When you look at these different sectors, there are different solutions that come into play. Some are easy to quantify. For example, you can be able to quantify energy efficiency, how much is being used in the industrial sector. Transportation sector, yes, we can also be able to quantify. But the concern here is mainly to try and look at other technologies that are energy efficient. The building sector, I've talked about two issues, the new buildings and the buildings that we retrofit, the existing building stock that has to be made efficient, and this brings in issues as related, because when these buildings were being done, they did not make provisions of the current requirements. In buildings, there are issues that have come up, and majorly in what we call green urbanism, trying to ensure that the urban areas have been planted with trees. The urban areas have systems that are able to deal with energy efficiency, waste management, traffic and transportation systems that are well interconnected and that are efficient. So sometimes you will find linkages from one area to another being improved, accessibility between different land uses being made efficient, planning and layout designs of buildings, how buildings are designed, the orientation of the buildings to ensure that as the sun moves, you know, you don't get in a lot of heat, okay? To ensure that you have cross ventilation. So a lot of these issues have to be taken care of. A lot of green spaces have to be introduced through landscaping techniques. And these landscaping techniques will ensure that we have conducive ecosystems around the buildings. And then green building infrastructure, where a lot of recycling of waste is done, sometimes recycling of water that is used in buildings. In the housing sector, we need to avoid and reduce on energy demand, a lot of reuse, and a lot of renewable energy. This is part of green urbanism. I've already mentioned this, the issue of natural ventilation, evaporative cooling, where we have, you know, you make large walls and heat is during the day, a lot of heat does not get in, and during the night, the wall does not lose a lot of heat, and therefore trying to keep the environment within the room almost stable. A lot of introduction of solar-related designs, having solar panels on the roofs, on the sides of the walls. This is being done. Retrofitting buildings, I've been mentioning this,
where you try to now bring in efficient energy technologies in old buildings which did not have them before. So this is just a snapshot of part of what is done. When you have compact housing, it means you are able to connect a lot of your systems and serve more people, okay, than to have a sprawling environment. When you have a sprawling environment, it becomes difficult to even supply water, because then water has to be pumped in pipes over a longer distance. But when you have a compact housing, then you are able to connect your people very, very easily with services. There are designs, for example, night venting cooling systems in areas where we have a lot of heat. And at night, you are able to open the windows, for example, in that manner and have air coming in. I talked about having big walls, evaporative cooling walls. You increase the volume, or rather the width of the wall, either using concrete or stone and other material, so that during the night, the room does not lose a lot of heat, and during the day, does not bring in a lot of heat. And that is just being explained in the other diagram that I've mentioned, thermal mass building. When it comes to the other system, for the system of water and wastewater in the urban area, one of the measures or the solutions that we normally want to take is reduction in water consumption. But also, for the wastewater, we can be able to tap into one of the resources at the end, where the sludge can be burned and then used to generate electricity. You can also tap into the methane gas that is generated and use this again to recycle, or rather to be used through the turbines, and then you are able to generate electricity. Recycling and reusing of materials is something that is very much common or encouraged when you have water and wastewater. As we walk around the streets in the transportation sector, you will find public lights. And these public lights are never off. They are always running at night, during the day, and so forth and so forth. They are using a lot of energy. There are measures that can be put in place. For example, we can be able to use solar traffic lighting, as I've shown in the figure there, instead of us connecting it directly to the mains, okay, because they are just running the entire day. Whether there is somebody crossing or there is nobody crossing, it is still coming on and off. You can also be able to have voltage sensitive traffic lights that respond to volumes of traffic. So when you don't have traffic, then they reduce in their power output. The transportation sector is a key sector when it comes to greenhouse gas emission. Globally, it contributes about 24% of the CO2 emissions. And this is expected to double as we move on towards the year 2050. And therefore, we need to look and think of measures in the urban area that we can be able to deal with
to reduce on the energy consumption. Improved infrastructure. We need to walk more and cycle more, use our muscles. We also need to look at options, public transport options, where mass transportation should be preferred to private transportation. And I have mentioned a number of other things prior, fuel efficient transportation solutions. I had mentioned about the green energy solutions. Again, here in the urban areas, we can be able to tap into this solar, geothermal, small hydro power, and so forth and so forth. Rooftop wind turbines, solar heating, and so forth. Sorry. We need to have urban greening where we can even have small gardens along the balconies of some of our high-rise buildings. Of course, through photosynthesis, we know very well plants take in part of the CO2 that is generated, and a lot of this is generated within the urban area. So if we can improve on the greening in urban areas, on some of the balconies that we have that have no green planting, then we are giving surfaces or areas where we can sink in CO2, because the plants will use CO2 and give us oxygen. So we need to increase these areas. So there are different ways in which this can be done. As you've seen in the first one, you can do those that on balconies. In the second one, you can have building designs that are sloping, where you can again be able to have a lot of surfaces that can be planted with suitable plants. So basically, in a home, there are various ways in which you can be able to ensure that you save on energy. And this diagram just shows some of the issues that I've been mentioning: the landscaping, water conservation, the insulation, the recycling, and so forth and so forth. So this diagram is just showing different areas in which this can be done in a building. So moving away from the urban area, I just want to finalize by looking at energy insecurity. Today, we are worried about our energy availability tomorrow or the next day. We have a lot of issues that are going on. Of course, the very reason that which is in everybody's mind is the war that is going on between Ukraine and Russia, who are major producers of oil. So we are having energy insecurity. Of course, beyond that, we have other issues. We have areas where we have had oil getting depleted, or their reserves really dwindling. A country like Brunei, at some point, Brunei was producing a lot of oil. Okay, and now the reserves have gone down. So we are having a lot of this as one of the, when you look around the world, you will find that there are hotspots where we have been relying on, and issues are arising, and therefore we have to start thinking about this dinosaur that doesn't want to go away. Okay, the dinosaur does not want to go away. We thought it went away, but it's there. Energy efficiency. It's the dinosaur that does not want to go away. So we want now to start looking at other sources, but we are not tapping into this or we have not fully tapped into those other sources. The demand is there. A lot of demand. And on this slide, I'm just trying to define or differentiate the three energy sources that we have. We have the non-renewable. These will run out at some point because they take a long time for them to be generated. For example, for us to be able to have the raw material or the organic material converted into oil, it takes millions and millions of years. So that then becomes a non-renewable because it will take so long. And we have renewable resources, but also we have some that are recyclable or continuous: wind, solar, hydroelectric, waves, tidal, and geothermal. These are naturally being produced and they are continuously being or available. The demand has been growing over the years. Between the 60s and the 80s, the demand of energy doubled globally. And it has been increasing and it will continue increasing as population rise, as people move to urban areas, as we continue manufacturing, the demand for energy will continue going up. Many of the developing countries, Brazil, Mexico, India, Africa, are developing so fast. And as they develop, they require a lot of this energy. But even as we demand, the problem is access. Do we have the access? We may demand, but do we have the access? Lately, fuel has been going up. So fuel cost. Technology. Yes, we may think nuclear energy production is the easier technology. But have we ever thought about terrorism? If a terrorist was to get hold of that nuclear station, what would happen? If we have war and the nuclear station is bombed, what would happen? Then we have the issue of the environmentalists who are saying some of these solutions you are thinking of are also destroying the environment and other issues. So you can see the impacts of energy insecurity. We could have, or they can be as a result of natural disasters, hurricanes, piracy sometimes in the seas. We've had some piracy, especially when we used to have, or when we were having the Somali wars, and this piracy is still going on. Terrorism can happen. The issues of politics, the geopolitics, and so forth and so forth. This could easily end up being disruptions in our supply of energy. On that slide, I'm just giving risks that have been there on gas and petroleum. Russia, we've mentioned it. We now know fuel has gone up. We don't know when this war is going to end. And is the war likely to spread to other places? These are uncertainties that we currently have. And here, we have to know that Russia holds about 25% of the world gas reserves. So when war erupts there, it means there's disruption of the gas supplies. We've had wars in Somalia that have made those countries ungovernable, and therefore we've had a lot of terrorists hijacking oil tankers as they pass through the Gulf towards Europe and other areas. We've had the Iraqi war. We also have the war in Yemen and other countries. So what are the risks associated with these disruptions? We know them, but I'll just remind you for the sake. Prices have gone up. I know in Europe, there are some countries where you are now not receiving hot water or something because disruptions and rationing. Sometimes we have civil wars, joblessness, and other risks that are associated. So what is the future and where do we need to go? Future demand of energy is uncertain. Of course, as population grows and as we move to urban areas, the future is uncertain. Lifespan of fossil fuel reserves is uncertain. In some areas, these reserves have really gone down, and I've given the example of Brunei. The extent to which we continue exploiting unconventional oil is uncertain as well. The extent and timing of switching from fossil fuel to renewable energies, again, is uncertain. How fast are we switching? Is it being accepted by everybody? And so forth and so forth. Of course, prices are rising. Thank you, and I'll stop there. Any questions?
My first question would be, the traffic light that is shown, you've seen that example. I just want to know what I'm curious. Is in practice now somewhere around the world?
Yes, we have countries where we are having traffic lights being practiced. I know in Kenya we have not shifted to that, but we have started having solar on street lights. Okay, so it's just the same concept where you have to have a storage battery that stores part of the solar that is being taken up by the panels. Okay, so it's just the same concept where we have street lights, the same concept that we have or we're being employed for solar lighting, street lighting. Okay, you have a battery, takes in the power through the panels, and then it is used.
I was just thinking in the context of Africa, when we have problems with the potentials.
Yes, some of these concepts have not been fully embraced. Of course, you know the situation sometimes in the African context, the security of the panels and all that. So they have. While some of these concepts are very, very good, again, there are other insecurity or other considerations that come into play. So you'll find some of these are localized solutions, solutions that cannot be used in large scale. So in areas where you have good security, then you can be able to employ this. And in areas where we may not have good security, then some of them become disadvantageous.